I know you like your triple welt J.M. Weston stuff, which, like, you claimed that you were absolutely going to break them in. They're absolutely going to whatever. No, of course not. Nope. Of course not. I told you that. Nope. At the time, I was like, those are never going to break in. You're like, I'm going to break them in. I'm going to do it. Just get a normal amount of midsoles, which is one or zero.
Thanks. Shoe bag cast. Welcome to the Stitchdown Shoecast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things we love about it. I'm Ben from Stitchdown.com. We've got lauded youth basketball coach Ticho Blanco in the saddle today for another shoe bag episode where we answer listener questions from around the globe. Usually not very well. Ticho, what's up? Give us some updates.
Ben, what's going on, man? I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. It's been a minute. We're recording this a couple days after a tough day for you. With your Buffalo Bills there. I'm sorry. I went to Wegmans. Everybody seems sad at Wegmans. I'm assuming that's what it was.
They're plugged in. They're just networked right into my feelings and all of Western New York. Yeah, it was brutal, man. You know, after the regular season game, I finally had an opportunity to, like, at least slightly dislike Patrick Mahomes for reasons other than just beating my team every time. But he, you know, got back to being a classy dude, and I don't know. They're a little cursed, and it was tough. I just did two things after that game, two things on a late Sunday night. I laid down just on my couch, and my wife eventually found me, and I wasn't, like, sleeping, but I wasn't doing anything else. Turned the TV off, and I was just in the darkness. She's like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, I don't know. But the thing I did before that, which allowed me to lie down on my couch just in the darkness, nothing in my brain, was I promised myself that I would delete Twitter from my phone, which I spent way too much time on for a vast portion of my life, as soon as the Bills lost, because that was my one excuse to kind of stay on there, right? You need to kind of get plugged in. Injury updates, hot takes, film breakdown, whatever. And I did it. I just went and did it. And it was cathartic. And so, yeah, I'm now, what, like 4 days into Twitterlessness experience and existence. And I'm beginning to come out of the other side pretty effectively. I have no idea what's going on in the world whatsoever now. My wife has begun reading me New York Post headlines from, like, top to bottom, which still doesn't tell you anything about what's going on in the world in a real sense. But ultimately, I think I will be a better person for it.
You know, man, one thing I've done that has been really good for me is just not at all following football or caring about football. It's been not something I needed in my life and just didn't have any value at all. Talk to me about, like, NBA stuff. I'm much more living the basketball life right now. I'm playing pickup basketball at a Catholic church with old men.
Perfect.
It's been great. I highly recommend that if you could just find a bunch of, like, old Catholic guys that will make fun of you for pretty much everything.
All right, before we get bagging, I just need to thank our wonderful and kind sponsor this week, Grant Stone. They are absolutely ripping right now with new styles, endless E and triple E options, and loafer season is right around the corner. Check out everything at grantstoneshoes.com. Also ripping, the Stitchdown Premium Discord, the hub of the community we've been building for almost 5 years now, which is kind of wild. If you dig this podcast, you will love the SDP Discord. If you dig this podcast, becoming an SDP member is the best way to support it and keep it going, other than maybe sending us, like, really heavily marbled Japanese meat or something. We'd be into that, right?
Are people doing that? Have people been sending you meat?
No.
I haven't been getting any of that meat.
Kind of throwing the line out there, but that would support us and keep us going too. But also membership, more info on stitchdown.com. And the rippingest footwear and leather lovers event of the year is once again happening in Industry City, Brooklyn, October 12th and 13th, 2024. Stitchdown's Bootcamp 2, celebration of shoemaking where you can hang out with the fine and damned helpful people who run dozens upon dozens of boot and shoe brands from around the world, plus all the truest believers in this thing they call footwear. This October, we're going to be expanding in some very cool ways. More tanneries, leather goods, craft-driven women's shoes, shoemaking workshops, industry panels, museum-type installations, all of it. Tickets will be on sale soon at stitchdownbootcamp.com, or I don't know when you're listening to this. It could be like 2037 for you, in which case you will have missed this one. But for most listeners, soon. But for now, save the date. October 12th and 13th, 2024, Brooklyn, New York. Be there. TJ, will you come?
I wouldn't miss it, man. I wouldn't miss it. I had a great time last time. It's a no-brainer. Gotta go.
We got one. We got one. I can't wait. I'm actually getting very excited about it. All right, let's do some questions. Open the bag. Not a Rice Krispie treat wrapper. All right, first question. It's a good table setter. Can you please make this a 2 to 3 hour episode?
No, I have to go buy some bread at like the 2 hour mark of this.
At the bread store?
I got to go to a local bakery, pick up some baguettes because it is charcuterie night for me. You know, you got to get that fresh bread.
All right. Sorry, guys. Sorry, listener. Now that that's established, next question. Waxed flesh versus waxy commander, which is kind of everywhere all of a sudden, and with good reason, I would say. What's the difference? Is one better than the other?
Well, the difference is that wax flesh is basically chrome Excel that's got a bunch of wax on it. And wax commander is a CF Stead suede that has a bunch of wax on it. Honestly, they're both great. I like both of them. So I think it's just a matter of your preference, what you're looking for. I think either one is going to, they age beautifully. They've are waterproof. You could re-wax them. You could do all that kind of good stuff. Is one better than the other? I don't think so. I think it's just, what do you prefer? You want something a little, maybe a little softer, maybe a little bit thinner, but still going to be super waterproof. That's wax commander. And then wax flesh, pretty intense, a little thicker, a little more hard wearing. The nap coming through is a little bit different, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, if you look at like these, you know, kind of legendary wax flesh pairs, there's photos of online, whatever. You see that like intense kind of brighter brown nap coming through on that brown wax flesh. Wax commander, you get that too, but it's not going to be, because it's not quite as nappy under there. You still get that cool texture and that cool pop of kind of a highlight color coming through. But I enjoy them both.
Yeah, I think you hit it. Wax flesh, the Horween wax flesh, it's usually like a thicker piece of leather, like a heavier weight for number one. Like it's kind of maybe like a little workier, but really it's like a heavier CXL, where the other one is a suede and I guess like a split, right? Like it's not the unsplit suede, I don't think.
I think Stead does some full grain suedes, but I don't know if they...
They definitely do. I don't know if it ends up in the Commander, actually. It's a good question. But either way, it's like it's a lighter weight. And then, yeah, the wax is definitely different too. Like it's a little tougher, maybe a lot. It's a lot tougher to break through and wear down that Horween wax flesh versus the Commander. So the Commander is like a bit more of a speed run, I would say, or can be. The wax flesh requires a little more dedication, I think, in all ways, just in terms of breaking it in, but then also breaking through and getting that visual effect that that people like. Yeah, I don't think there's like a wrong way one way or the other. Like if that's something you're looking for, you know, some sort of speed Tina situation, you got to go with the Commander. And it is just like a little easier wearing. And it works really well, I think, on what we're seeing more on, you know, those like middle ground styles, like a Blucher, perhaps, where, you know, you're generally seeing the wax flesh on like a pretty serious boot. And the Commander can kind of go up and down in that range, I would say, pretty easily. But yeah, there's something about it, I think, and maybe just kind of how it looks down the road without the heavy nap contributes to that. Your boy Russell, Crafty Cumbrian, posted like a 12-year-old pair of Waxy Commander Trickers the other day. Just I forget what it was, but it was like, okay, yeah, you know, you see. Oh, it was like the Viberg post. It was like, yeah, they got a lot of Waxy Commander in this current collection. And he's like, I've been at this for longer than you've been alive, mate. And I'm like, I've been alive a really long time, dude. So you're wrong there. But they look really cool. It was like, you know, Borton Brogues, I think. Man, they were just kind of destroyed in like the coolest possible way. But there were still like these little patches of wax. I don't know. We didn't do the whole thing. I don't know if he's re-waxed them or whatever. But there was something to them. And I think it works pretty darn well on that kind of shoe, too.
Russ might be the only person in this hobby that is older than you. So shout out to Russ. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of those British country guys have figured out that a wax suede works out perfectly for, you know, for what they're doing. You even see Edward Green doing Galways in it, and those, I think, always end up looking really, really cool. Yeah, I think that's what's nice about the Wax Commander is you can kind of elevate it a little bit more to be a little dressier, a little bit less of a workwear type of boot. So I'd say it's a little bit more versatile, but Wax Flesh, that's, it's like driving a tank, man. It's kind of unstoppable. My wife is actually rocking some Horween Wax Flesh Usmos, and I was like, I kind of warned her. I was like, this is going to be kind of intense. And she is beating the heck out of them, hiking in them, wearing them in the yard, doing tons of stuff. I help her out. I maintain them, you know, mostly just like rinsing all the dirt off and keeping the edges clean and stuff like that. Our friend Hargis McFargus got me a little welt brush. Yeah, I can really get in there on them. But the leather itself has basically looks brand new. It's like unfazed after, you know, almost a year of going to town on them. That's Wax Flesh.
One final thought, because Chrome XL is, you know, I mean, kind of at any weight. And there's like a really heavy version that I still think this applies to an extent. Like, oh yeah, you want like a really comfortable pair of boots? Like, just get some Chrome XL. It'll be great. It's really pliable. Like, everything will go really fast. It tells you the amount of wax and exactly how they're getting it on there, which like we should probably ask Nick to give a little more detail on sometime. That tells the story because that's not really the case, even though it's the same leather with just some wax on it. You talked about little tiny brushes. Maybe this is your answer. What are your favorite boot/leather care tools or products?
Oh.
Or what's like the core stuff? What would you be like, it wouldn't make sense to be without this.
Number one thing you need, big horsehair brush, right? You got to have the
biggest brush you can get.
Biggest brush you could find. Get the biggest one you could find. I've got one. I think I just bought it on Amazon. It's like a star brush or whatever, but it's like, I don't know, 10 inches long. It's huge.
That's what I got here.
Yeah, you could absolutely go to town. The surface area of the brush is such that it's covering a lot of area there. So it's a little more efficient. And
brushes, you can kind of catch it sometimes. You know, you can catch like the, I don't know, I guess it's called a handle. Like the wood piece, you can kind of, every once in a while, you'd be like, oh no, I got my boot. Like it's basically impossible to do it with the big brush, which is why I always
get the big boy.
One.
Get the big boy for sure. That's an essential. That like follows me around the house. What else? Oh, you got to have the little, the soft cloth, the little chamois cloth or shiny.
I never use the cloth. I have piles of cloths.
I have a really nice one. I want to say it came with like a pair of Alfred Sargents or something years ago, but it's like, again, you want something that's kind of long, right? You want something that's kind of long and rectangular so that you can get it and then just buff over the top like you see like a shoeshine kid do in like an old timey movie. You know, he's like, he's got the little newsboy cap on and he's for 5 cents he's shining your shoes. Like you want that. That's a real thing that you should use. Yeah, whenever I'm like taking pictures of my boots, the thing I do right before is I just buff the heck out of it with that cloth. Gives it a nice kind of shiny look. Nice healthy glow.
How are we because I'm both looking at you doing it and picturing the little shoeshine boy. In that situation, he's got somebody's foot in front of him. The shoe and the foot are both in front and they're kind of anchored, right? Like, are you anchoring your shoe somehow?
If I'm doing it on my feet, then you just put your foot up on like a chair or a step or something, and then you do it. If it's not on my foot, you just put the shoe kind of in between you hold it between your thighs with the toe kind of sticking up, and then you give it like that.
You just gotta get it.
Yeah, you just go after it like that. It works pretty well. And then for the rest, that's for the toe, right? You do, you know, you do the cranking back and forth for the toe. And then for the rest of it, you just kind of put it on your hand and kind of just do a wax on, wax off. Right, you're just trying to create some friction, try to, you know, smooth out some oils, bring some oil to the surface. If it's like Chrome XL, something like that, you know, bring out the naturalness that's in there. You're creating a little heat, right? You're creating a little heat and kind of smoothing it out, getting a nice shine on the surface. So I don't know the science of that, but that's what I would assume is going on there.
Okay, sold. What else? Products?
Yeah, products. Depends on what leather you have. I like to have a lot of different stuff. I've got my shoebox full of different products right here. I keep Venetian shoe cream. Got to have some of that. Saphir Renovator. Classic. That's a great one to have.
Definitely pronounced correctly.
I've got some colored kind of paste polishes for like from Saphir, like for dress shoes. If you got black dress shoes, get some black, you know, whatever. Cream. I don't like the colored polish that kind of cakes on. I also haven't attempted to do like a mirror shine in a long time because it's really hard and it takes a long time. And if you do it badly, then it looks awful. I just kind of gave up on doing that. But I used to love trying to do a mirror shine on my dress shoes.
How do you see the split between those? Because I'm usually using the Saphir Renovator and I have the VSC. It's all like kind of old. You're like, probably just shake this every once in a while, but I don't think it goes.
Yeah, you gotta shake it.
Bad necessarily. But yeah, like there's, I don't know, maybe a misperceived interchangeability between those two. And then I use just Bic 4 for kind of general use. Like when you know that the Saphir works on something, you use it, right? And if you don't really know what's going to work, like Bic 4 is generally pretty safe in my experience.
I'm in between bottles of Bic 4 right now. I finished up a bottle of it like a couple weeks ago and I haven't reordered it. So I'm like looking at my box. I don't have it. Yeah, Bic 4 is also pretty essential. I use that on a lot of stuff. You know, the Renovator I more use on like dressier stuff. VSC is like Chrome XLs and stuff like that. So more like rugged stuff, veg tan stuff. It just depends on what leather it is. Those are the main three that I'm doing. What else do I have in here? Oh, I've got some of the kind of like nano spray, right? If I'm trying to put that on suede or something like that, I will occasionally nano spray it because I think it's cool. You know, you go to a birthday party or something and I'm wearing my suede Grant Stone loafers or something. People are like, you get cool loafers, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, dude, watch this. And I just pour a cup of coffee on them, you know, and it just sprays off. And they're like, whoa, no, what are you doing? And I was like, dude, it's fine. It's all good. Nano spray. And they're like, what? That's my main party trick. I don't know. Social situations can be hard, but sometimes you just pour a cup of coffee on your loafers and everything's okay.
You should be the paid entertainment, man. Kids would love it. Come and spill some shit on my shoes.
Yeah, no, kids, rare opportunity. They go crazy for it. Yeah, they go crazy. If you're really trying to get the kids hopped up, going crazy for you, just dump some coffee on your loafers.
Yeah, I got to try that. I got to try that. You know, I'll do it in a different state so as to not kind of steal your thing.
No, you can have it. You can have it. Just, you know, send me like $3. Send me like $3 after you do it. Just be like, hey, I did your bit. Here's $3.
That's pretty much it for me, though. I mean, I've got a lot of stuff, and sometimes it gets used, but that's the core stuff. Oh, yeah, and I've also been using this James B. Young camel fat dubbin, which my man James, who lives in, I guess you could call it the outback in Australia, makes out of exactly what it sounds, camel fat. He sent over a bunch. I still have some. If anybody, just DM me if you want to buy some of the stuff. It's pretty cool. But the only thing I've really used it on so far is, well, I use it on some gloves, these beautiful Sullivan gloves, handmade in Oregon, I'm pretty sure. They're wonderful. They're like, they're lined. They're like dog walking kind of work gloves for the winter. Somehow they just went through the washing machine and dryer, which was not the best thing to do with a pair of leather gloves. And they looked really sad. And I put this stuff on it and it was like, oh yeah, we're back. We're not exactly the same as we were before that ordeal, but we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. So that was great. And then I put it on my, you know, not a leather that you see really anywhere else, the French Veal Russell moccasins, which I'm pretty sure I had for like 3 years and never conditioned at all and have worn an absolute ton. That leather is just remarkable stuff. And it worked really well. Very, very happy. It darkened it a little bit, but not too much. You know, they needed a drink and they got it. Dubbin traditionally is, to oversimplify it, kind of like a waxy, fatty situation that you would put on like your rough out boots, you know, back in the war. And this is not that. It's more for smooth leathers. It actually says specifically don't use it on suede or rough out.
I have a pair of camel rough out Vibergs. Do you think, I guess it says no rough out, but it's camel. It should work, right? That's should be compatible with that, given that it's camel leather and camel fat, I would think.
Yeah. Camel fat would be like, send me home.
Yeah. It's like that all that has to add up.
Feel good here.
Yeah.
I feel like we've always talked about how to do like a big like care episode I don't know, maybe DM us with ideas there, because it's tough, right? I feel like it's very personal and like all others are different. Like there's not a full playbook you can use. You know, biggest thing, use on a small, obscure portion of the boot. Wait a day and then figure the rest of your life out.
And less is more is also a good one to go by. You could always put more on. You can always put on more. It's hard to take it off.
Tough to put on less after you've already put on more. All right. We're all transitions this time. You talked about suede. Somebody wants to know, wonderful listener, the best Alden suede model / color combo in history ever.
Probably snuff suede LHS, I would think.
That's it.
That's the prime use of a nice suede, where it's nice and flexible, unlined, perfect for the summertime. Obviously, there's a lot of other good suede options from our friends in Massachusetts, but that one for me really does. I can see them on my shelf right here. Man, they're great. I've been kind of contemplating getting another pair, but my Grant Stones are still going strong, so I'm kind of holding off on that. I have a pair of suede indies. That's a great use of the suede. For me, I'm a snuff guy. The snuff is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, there's many wonderful shades of suede. I have some fun kind of like blue-gray ones from Grant Stone. Storm suede, I believe. Also, Stead. You need some snuff. Like, very early on, I'm holding them up for you right now. This would be my personal pick, even though I think the loafers are kind of like the classic can't miss for anybody. But yeah, snuff suede, plain toe, True Balance, leather sole. These are second pair of Aldens and one of the boots that I've worn most in my life. And God, they're perfect. These are the ones where like I was at a kid's birthday party and dropped, I think, like some ribs or wings or something on the boot very early on. And they left a mark because they were very greasy and I didn't spray them. And you just keep wearing them. And then a couple years later, you're good. But yeah, I took a little birthday party hiatus after that for a while. I was like, this is dangerous.
Maybe that's your take on my move is you do ribs. Get it sprayed up. I hate to waste a good rib. Maybe, you know, just do the end of it or something. Sometimes there's those weird ends on the ribs, you know, just be, drop it on your boot. Just go from there. Everybody's like, oh my God, he dropped ribs on his boots. And you're like, don't even worry about it. And then just start spraying it with the hose, right? Help yourself to the garden hose. Just start spraying them off. It's all good. Kids are going crazy.
I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be great. But yeah, anyway, Alden, Snuff Suede, lots of other great stuff. But I think that's the about as timeless a combo as you can get.
I'll give an honorable mention to Loden Suede, which I do like.
The Loden is tight. It's not like green, green, green. It's in the slot.
It's really hard to photograph. Whenever like Curtis would text me and be like, I got some Loden Suede loafers in, I'm like, that's going to be a pain in the butt trying to find light that actually makes these look green instead of just gray. It's tough. They look different in a different light. But yeah, when you catch that green, man, that's good.
We've seen them.
Yeah.
All right. We always get these, so we're going to do it. If Chicho had to give up either hot dogs or bodega sandwiches for life, which one gets the axe?
I mean, I can't give up hot dogs, dude. Oh, I can't give up hot dogs.
Think about the range available in sandwiches.
Let me ask you.
It could be a cheesesteak, obviously bacon, egg, and cheese.
All right.
Something else with cheese.
Does that count? So I don't live in New York City. Like, I don't actually go to what you would consider a bodega. I do have a place in my town that is basically a bodega. You can get a bacon, egg, and cheese on like a roll or whatever. It also inexplicably has like really good Indian food.
There's something bodega-y about that.
Yeah. Do I have to not go to that?
There?
Do I have to not go to, I can't go to that place, I guess.
I don't think you could.
Can
no.
I go to a bagel place and get a Taylor ham, egg, and cheese?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, as long as I can.
If it's
that,
on a bagel.
It's on a bagel, yeah. Egg everything. Salt, pepper, ketchup. I can't give up hot dogs, dude. I love hot dogs. I eat hot dogs all the time. I go to Costco once a month. You get a hot dog. How can you you're passing up $1.50 hot dog and a drink? You're going to give that up? No chance. No chance. You go to a baseball game? Hot dog. What else do you eat at a baseball game?
Garlic fries. Go Yanks.
I don't like the New York Yankees. I'm a Red Sox fan. I'll give them this. Good chicken fingers.
Oh, yeah. Consistently. Even with all like the new food coming in,
Yeah.
They still got those same, it's got like that extra kind of crunch. It's like wax flesh, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Of chicken fingers.
I took my took my kids to a Yankees Yankee Red Sox game, and they have this great, and I hate to be complimented to the Yankees. It really does pay me to do that. It's a cup, right? It's a cup for like a drink, but then it's got a tray that sits on the top of it for your chicken fingers, right? So you get a cup, it's just a cup, so your whole, it's great for eating it, a kid eating it at the seat, right? He's got this big cup full of lemonade or whatever, and then the top of it is just full of french fries and chicken fingers. It's brilliant.
I haven't seen this. I haven't been to a Yankee game in a few years.
Dude, I hate to compliment them. It really does pay me to do it. But I was looking at this thing, and I was like, whoever invented this is an absolute genius. This is great. Yeah, and the chicken fingers are great. They're good.
They've always been. You're complimenting Aramark right now, which seems fine.
It pains me to compliment Aramark as well. I think they did my high school cafeteria, and it was awful. It was terrible.
Damn. It's both classy and unclassy at the same time to have Aramark running your high school cafeteria. Somebody's got to service the food, man. Somebody's got to service the food. All right. How about this one? Which once great brand that went corporate would you most want to return to its former glory?
Oh, Florsheim, man. We got to bring back the behemoth of the United States in the 20th century. That was where it was all going down. That was American footwear.
It really
for
was.
For decades and decades, it's not that now. It is, couldn't be further from that. It's, frankly, pretty embarrassing that that's like what happened to that. And that's true for all the brands that would kind
Name
of fall
all.
Under this.
Yeah.
That would
especially all the dress shoe stuff.
You know, I couldn't be more upset with the generation of people that allowed that to happen, specifically Warren Buffett, who, if I meet, I will fist fight. But I'd start with Florsheim. That would be the, if I could only choose one, that's what I would do. And I would put our boy Nathan in charge. Let's do it.
That would be a reasonable choice. Yeah, man. That's a great, I was thinking kind of more in like the boot sphere, but of course that's perfect. They are the icon, just everybody running around wearing gunboats in like one or two colors. And like, that was America again. Like I would be feeling that. I really would be.
Totally. What are you going for?
I mean,
Nunn Bush.
You know who loves Nunn Bush is our boy Francis Wapplinger. I love the way he says it, Nunn Bush, because he's got all that stuff. Like he's very, very inspired by those days of footwear, and you can see it in his work. But for whatever reason, I don't know if he's just got a ton of catalogs from them or they were doing something a little different that he was digging. Because like, again, every one of these brands made basically the same looking long wing, and it was wonderful. There was, oh God, a pair of dead stock, the deadest stock possible, Nunn Bush gunboats in a random thrift store in Brooklyn that I would just pop into like on my way home from the train every once in a while. They were perfect. They were like $60 and they were seriously like a size 14, like a true 14. So I didn't end up getting them. You could look at them and you're like, okay, this is like the length of my forearm, but I'm still going to try them on. And that hurt. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Francis would be the guy to ask about them. I mean, the one that bums me out in the boot space right now, because they're not making a ton of boots. They have a whole bunch of corporate, let's just call it upheaval, like change in CEOs and the bigger companies selling off brands, is Wolverine, which was my first pair of, before I understood any of this, two sizes too big. I've told this story before, but Wolverine 1000 Miles from like, call it 12 or 15 years ago, that I wore to like formal events because I didn't have any other shoes to do for that. Really like a fabulous boot. The last is fantastic. One, they're not making a ton of them, and two, they've definitely made some materials changes, unfortunately, and it's just not the same thing. But when I was there, I mean, shout out Wolverine, like as a company, the people there, all the brands they have, doing really a fantastic job in so many ways. But like the name on the sign is not the thing that they're focused on right now, and from like a business perspective, I totally get it. But they had the original boots, or an original pair from like 1906 or something, in this glass case, and they were perfect. But it was the same boot, it was the same pattern, it was the same last. It was like, you can do this. Nobody had better ads. We still need to do that, like reading ads aloud episode. Let's do that. Then the Wolverine ones with the shell horsehide, like outsoles, right?
Yeah.
Like they had like shell cordovan outsoles, and just these graphics where they're peeling them away. They're just so fucking cool. I have a bunch that I bought on eBay from like random magazines that are, I think, still sitting in the envelope that they came in. So I should probably frame those. But yeah, there's like, I have kind of like a personal connection to them. And, you know, just as like a classic 6-inch lace-up boot, you know, they all had leather soles back in the day. I remember kind of understanding it, but it was like a big deal when they started putting like rubber soles on them, like not that long ago. Yeah, it's kind of almost like in that Florsheim vein where, you know, there was this time. We ain't going back to it, but what if we did, you know? And like, I think that would be pretty cool. Just like a full spec Wolverine 1,000-mile boot, I would be into. Because you could just wear it. There's no frills and you don't need them. It's one of those boots that you just commit to it and wear the hell out of. And people are like, damn, that's a really cool looking old beat up boot.
Wolverine, man, A-plus name, one of the best names for a boot brand I could think of. Wolverine's cool animal. You know, just that classic work boot design is so easy to wear. It's so timeless. There's always just going to be guys that want to wear that. There's always going to be women that want to wear that. Everybody wants to just wear. It's like you ask a kid to draw a boot, he's basically drawing a Wolverine 1,000-mile. So,
and you could say that like, even compared to anything in the Red Wing lineup. I mean, let's get the mock toe out of there, but like a plain toe boot, the Beckman, which at the trade shows, Red Wing's bringing it back in the fall in a couple styles, not the flat box, unfortunately, but
I'll take
still
it.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Or, I mean, the Iron Ranger obviously has like a thing that's happening that's kind of immediately apparent to anybody with, you know, the toe cap and backstay and whatever. And like, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, like there are service boots that are proliferating and they all look great and are based on something. But yeah, you could say that 1,000-mile boot is like kind of the purest like boot that you could get, like pattern, last, just the whole setup. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, shout out to everybody at Wolverine. I had a great time when I was out there last year. Kind of tried to, you know, tell a couple people this exact thing. So like bring it back. Because I think there's something to it, even if it was like a, you know, small kind of trial run or something. They fit good, too. That's important. Especially because I think it's like an old-ass last. They just happened to get it right a couple years after I was born, 1906.
You know, you could see when companies who have this really, really old reaching back heritage where they have this almost archive of lasts and patterns from back in the day, like, those are the good patterns. I hate to be the pattern hipster here, but they just don't do it like that anymore. So.
Okay. Let's popularize the hopefully only slightly derogatory use of pattern hipster going forward. All right. One more and let's take a break. Kind of related. Any style of boot, Mr. Pattern Hipster, that you see gaining popularity over the next year or so?
I think it's cowboy boots, man. I think the cowboy boots are coming. I see it. I'm cowboy boot curious myself. I've seen a lot of cool cowboy boots out there. I think that's catching my eye. That's catching a lot of people's eyes. I think people who were dove in on engineer boots are looking to keep going even deeper.
They're ready.
And yeah. They're right there. They're primed for it. I don't think engineer boots are going anywhere. I think those are, it's a rad style of boot. I think the cowboy boots are coming, man. Yeah, I think it's still... that's still on its come up, and it's going to saturate this this little corner of the footwear world to a larger degree than it is right now.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. Like, you're starting to see them all over the place, and like, you know, a lot of stuff that eventually trickles into what guys are wearing kind of starts with women and whatever those cycles are, and definitely around New York, I think you'll see them in the spring too. Just like kind of more of that, and mixing them, matching them with like whatever, right? Like, women cannot wear skirt, dress, obviously pants, but like, you know, men's pants are getting bigger. Loving all my big pants. Some room for that to kind of flow around. But also I think you're seeing, you know, whether it's like a Roper type style, or there's certain brands that are beginning to carry over some of those toe shapes, which I think is part of it, right? There's like, okay, you got the heel and obviously all the decorative stuff and just like the cowboy connotation that might be a barrier to some people. Yeah, I think that the toe is a big part of it too. Like the super pointy cowboy toe is not for everybody, even people who might be interested in the style generally. And I think you're going to start to see less traditional, rounder, you know, almondy. Like, you still need some kind of edge to it, I think, on like a true cowboy boot and not necessarily a roper to that toe, or like isn't kind of what it's supposed to be. But yeah, you're starting to see other stuff that's like just not like this jagged tip. And I think that opens it up to more people too, because most of the boot is covered by your pants if you're a guy.
I think that nice silhouette of like boot cut or whatever kind of jeans, like more cowboy cut kind of stuff, I've been seeing a bunch of that. Works with an engineer. I think it works even better with like a roper cowboy boot. The thing about cowboy boots, right, is it's got that nice thick tall heel, kind of Cuban woodsman style heel as part of it. And like, I personally, I'm like just a shade under 6 feet tall. If I wear a pair of like engineer boots, I don't own cowboy boots, but if I did, I'd be like 6'1", and that would be amazing. So that in and of itself is all I need.
You're going to get there. Play some hoops in them. And then, yeah, from like the nerd perspective, once you start to understand cowboy boots and construction and how they're put together, it's kind of a whole nother world. There's so much cool stuff going on. The fact that you can just flip it over and inspect basically the guts of it on the outside of the boot in a way that you can kind of do with a welted shoe, but not to say, I mean, you see those pegs, you see that waist, and there's just like, I don't know, a more obvious, easy connection you can make with how your boots were made with them. And then obviously like the, you know, the high end work, like if I was going to drop like a whole bunch of money on an expensive pair of boots, like probably not getting a pair of bespoke dress shoes. We kind of keep waiting. And I think that there's like a bit of a movement towards bespoke boots that aren't cowboy boots. But yeah, man, like I'm probably calling up like Graham Ebner or something and being like, all right, let's get me on this list. Like, let's do something really cool and really creative that can be completely unchecked in a way that you can't do with any other kind of boot. And is this incredible showpiece that hopefully you're also going to wear a ton. Yeah, there's just a little more to it than with other styles, and like a little more kind of upside and more that it can kind of do and more you can grab onto a little bit with those. You know, I mean, there's a reason that people have been spending a whole lot of money on custom cowboy boots for a long time now. But yeah, maybe not just people in Texas or whatever. I saw, you see those flower boots that Graham did recently?
Oh,
that
yeah.
He posted? I saw them yesterday.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I was talking to Peter, who runs Wythe, who also makes some really cool cowboy boots and Western wear stuff. And I was like, damn, man, your boots are looking really good. And he was like, yeah, well, Graham made these. And I was like, oh, I love it. You're at a trade show pimping your own stuff, wearing Graham's boots. And they were absolutely fabulous, dude. This flower work that he did, like, it's just insane. It's completely insane stuff. It was really just special to see him, because I had never seen a pair of his boots in person. Like, there's only so many out there. I don't know. There's something very, very, very striking about like a perfect pair, especially one that, you know, was made by somebody who's really good at it. So
if you're going to order a pair from Graham, what kind of motifs are you going to have him stitch on there?
Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll put in a special request. He can make the right boot a little bit wider for you.
Hey,
sorry, man. Brutal. That was right there.
Fuck your Red Sox.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would be like, all right, let's get on the phone. Let's crack some beers and let's talk for like 2 hours and then do it again in a week. And then you just go, you know, like put the trust in their hands. Like, I'm not going to pretend to be some sort of expert cowboy boot designer, but I could tell you about some shit that I care about, you know?
Yeah, I think I'd probably do some kind of motifs to, I'm not a cowboy. I don't live down in Texas. I live in the great state of New Jersey. I think I'd go for our state bird, the goldfinch.
Ooh, yeah, birds would be good.
Whatever our state flower, I don't know what our state flower is. Maybe some industrial smokestacks, bagel sandwich, bagels, stuff like that. Just really,
this makes sense.
Just like make it about where I'm from. I'm going to be a cowboy. I'm going to be a New Jersey style cowboy, you know?
I can't wait to see these things. They're going to be great. Keep me looped. All right, let's just visualize that and take a quick break. We'll be right back with the shoe bag. Everyone's feet are different. And oh, they are. Why does basically nobody sell great boots, loafers, and more in various widths? It's criminal. Well, the people over at Grant Stone, where nobody is a criminal, they're all actually extremely nice and law-abiding, continue to take a different path. Grant Stone currently offers over 50 styles in triple E width, with even more available in single E, and of course well over 100 styles in D width. Looking for, say, a bourbon suede or natural chrome XL penny loafer in triple E? Or maybe some Kudu mock toe brass boots? How about a classic diesel lace-up boot in veg tan or bison leather triple E? I'll give you one guess on where to go. Grant Stone. If that wasn't totally clear. Best of all, everything that's in stock is in stock, which means your feet will be wildly happy in like 3 days in most cases. Not bad, Grant Stone. Not bad at all. Give Grant Stone's full lineup, including all those triple E's, a look at GrantStoneShoes.com. And now, back to the ShoeCast. All right, we're back on the Shoe Bag with Ticho. I actually just ran through it during the break in my head, like warming up for a conversation with Graham. Basically, it was me, but I was George Costanza, and I had just lost my job. I'm like sitting on Jerry's floor. It's like, I like sports. But guess what? George ended up getting a job with the Yankees.
I know.
A couple seasons later. So yeah.
Maybe you could be the general manager of the Bills, and you can get them a kicker that could kick straight.
Yeah, kicker's done, man. Kicker's fucking done. I like Brandon Bean a lot. He's doing a good job. He's hopefully not wearing Cole Haan with the sneaker soles. He might be, but you know, he's a handsome guy put together. I should probably talk to him about some shoes.
I like that we overlook Cole Haan as even being salvageable at this point. Like, we can't, there's no coming back from those.
There's no
coming
thing.
Back from that. Those Lunar Grand freaking things, man. Oh,
they've
my
got
God.
A thing, and it's they're unfortunately so bad. Well liked. It's a little strange. All right, questions. Let's do this. We got a lot this week. This might be a 3-hour episode.
Nah, I gotta get this bread, dude.
Right, you gotta get the bread. I'm sorry. Help, I just bought some Red Wings, and now my whole outfit style is changing.
Okay, sounds like you don't need help. Sounds like it's going great.
Here's the thing.
Sounds like he's crushing it.
I don't think that you do need that much help. I feel like a pair of Red Wings, kind of whatever they are, it could be mock toes, Iron Rangers, whatever, you don't need terribly complex stuff to go with that, right? Like any pair of jeans that you like. Doesn't have to be $600 pair of jeans. Doesn't have to be like whatever cuts in. Like just any pair of jeans that you're going to kind of wear every day.
Mm-hmm.
When it's nice out, you just wear a t-shirt, honestly. And like you're set and you can get yourself like a jacket of some kind. Like you could go more denim, some kind of workwear jacket that you could get a pretty darn nice one for like a couple $100. And then obviously you can like work other shit in here. But I feel like that's just kind of one of the easiest moves. Like I feel like it's even a little tougher to be like, okay, I got this beautiful pair of like 20-30 service boots or something. And then there's other kind of places you want to go or you want the outfit to like live up to this boot that's, you know, kind of slightly more elevated stylistically. I mean, I feel like that's just, it's such like a classic move that there's no problems there. Like, I think that anybody can pull it off.
Look, if you're starting out with a pair of Red Wings, you're already on the right foot, right? You're doing great. Any jeans is going to be fine. Right, just get some Levi 501s, get some Wranglers, get whatever you need. You want something nicer, get some sugar canes or something. I've been into sugar canes. Any shirt, yeah. Flannel shirt is a classic that we get roped into the urban lumberjack kind of look. But like, guess what? That's because if you're just walking around in Red Wings jeans and a flannel shirt, you look like a acceptable person. No one is going to question that. It is totally fine. I've been doing a lot of puffy vest over the flannel. I've been less into like a really plaid. The plaid, I'm so picky about plaids. I just can't even do it. I got this UES extra heavy, just indigo. It's just a blue shirt. Easy.
Love it.
Just a blue man, brown boots. If it's real cold, throw a puffy vest over it. A little watch cap kind of thing. I like the Oak Street Bootmaker ones. I have a bunch of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're real nice. Yeah, that's That's all you need. That's all you need.
You get like a chamois shirt. You can get, you could do like a kind of like half Western shirt maybe where it's not like all the stuff, but like some snaps, like that plays.
I did get a couple of like Ironheart shirts that I bought secondhand because they're like pretty pricey. They're great. It's just a nice looking denim shirt.
You could pop on like a crew neck sweatshirt, pop on a hoodie. Like it, basically you're just
big chunky sweater.
You just keep wearing the same jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course you could do a sweater. Always do a sweater.
Yeah. If you want to get the best possible inspiration, just follow Stitch Down Daily Fits, which,
oh man, it's good.
Still going every day, right? Still going every single day. We're not missing any days.
Every day.
Yeah.
It's daily.
Daily. It's right in the name.
Some of the clothes actually fit.
Wow.
Yeah, pimp that. We're looking across, I believe, 400,000 subscribers any day now.
Yeah, so, any day now. We're so close.
Get on there before it's like all blown up. You know, you can say you were early.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think this this listener needs any help. I think they're already doing great. Good job by you, listener, on getting going with some Red Wings. It all starts with the shoes, right? Nothing makes me more heated than when I see somebody who has an otherwise good outfit and then has terrible shoes on. That is the worst. If you got the shoes down, you're good. Everything else is just whatever.
As we just established for our Red Wing questioner here, one pair of boots and pair of jeans and a couple of, like, you're good. You can be doing really good, feeling good. But this question is an important one. What is a realistic amount of boots? And then they give some context for what they think might be a realistic amount of boots, which frankly I love. One black, one brown, one special. I mean, my answer is going to be kind of yeah. Like, you don't need 30 pairs of boots. It's
black,
fun.
Black, brown, special. You got it covered. Got all your bases covered there.
Like, maybe work in some stylistic difference, pattern-wise, I would say. You don't need to, necessarily. But I'd say if you're going black and brown, like, just two kind of regular lace-up boots, like, I would have a little fun with one of them. Maybe that's where special comes in. But yeah, in terms of, like, you know, matching your stuff, like, black or brown kind of gets it done. I guess brown's a little more versatile, maybe. I don't know. I'm honestly never very good with that stuff. And you're wearing them all, and you're rotating them, and maybe one of them has got a sole that's better for the winter, but you can wear all the time, too. Maybe one's a rough out and one's smooth, right? Like, there's ways to play around with this. Again, whatever special is, like, I don't know, just go for it. I would make the special one also something that you're also not just wearing on whatever a special occasion might be, if you're going for three pairs being a realistic amount. But, like, I don't know, we'd probably all be a lot healthier if this is how we thought. We might not have a podcast. Yeah, man, I'm like kind of feeling that, you know?
I got into for a while the idea, the French wardrobe concept, right? Where you have like the minimum amount of items, right? But they're all versatile. They all go together. And I feel like this listener's concept of a shoe three pair shoe rotation fits into that, where you got black, you got brown, you got something special, two pairs of pants, a couple shirts, you know. And I think this, you know, Red Wing guy can learn from this. Like, that's all you need. Just get like a nice flannel shirt that goes with everything you have. Get a nice denim shirt, goes with everything you have, and get like two pairs of jeans, three pairs of boots. Keep it tight. Keep it tight. Wear everything, right? All of the things that we like, right? Especially these like really nice Japanese stuff and, you know, heavy, the Ironheart stuff and all. It all looks a lot better if it's like actually worn in, right?
Wants to be worn.
It all wants to be worn. It's made to be worn. And if you like have 15 pairs of jeans, they're always all going to look new. You know, if you have like two that you're rotating, eventually they get really worn in and they look nicer, and that's how they're intended to be worn, right? Should we do it? Should we go down? I know we've done five that we would cut it at five. Do you think we could get it down to three? I personally cannot.
Maybe if it's just boots.
Just
frankly,
boots,
I'm wearing shoes most of the time, so.
That's tough.
Yeah, it would be a little tricky. But, yeah, I mean, back to the original question. What is a realistic or reasonable amount of boots? Three. I think anybody who has a lot more than that, like dozens or 50 or something, I imagine they would be the first to tell you that this is an unreasonable amount of boots, but it's pretty fun and there's reasons for it. And, you know, financially that something you can make happen, sure, like go for it. Like, I'm supportive of that too, but not ever, you know, the one to be like, oh yeah, you need this, you need another pair of boots. So yeah, it's different, right? But like, of course that's unreasonable. Like, who are we kidding?
Yeah, I'll also plug a great article from a little website called stitchdown.com from our buddy Josh. The Responsible Shoe Buyer's Guide.
Oh man.
Great article. Everybody should read that semi-regularly. It's great perspective for this whole thing.
It's very grounding because I mean Josh personally, like he pitched it and he's like, I'm in a spot, man. Like I keep doing things that I don't necessarily know that I should be doing in terms of boot acquisition. I want to really inspect that and digest it and write this thing. And it was like really kind of intense and personal for him. And he absolutely knocked it out of the park. Yeah, I think it's one of the most important things we've ever published because, I mean, look, that's the thing, right? Like, why are we doing this? You know, I mean, one, because we're enjoying it. Two, because people keep sending us questions about hot dogs. You got to answer them. But a big thing is like, we love this stuff. If nobody cares about it and nobody buys it, then it disappears like Florsheim and everything else, right? So, you know, you create interest in it. That should work. Like, if there's demand, then there will be production and the cycle continues apace. Once you realize how wonderful great shoes and boots are, you can't go back to like the old stuff. Like, it's impossible. Like, you can't do it. You can't do it. And that could be one pair or 100. It doesn't matter. But on the 100 end of things, you kind of run the risk of like burning yourself out, you know? Maybe not altogether, but sometimes you just have to separate from things that have like gotten a hold of you and just like detach. Frankly, one of my favorite emails to get when somebody's like, hey, you know, I got an MI subscription. Like, I love this Discord. I love this community, but like, I just need to back away from this for my personal sake and financial sake and all that. I'm like, go for it, man. It's like, maybe I'll be back. Maybe I won't. But like, thank you for everything. Talk about reasonable. Like, that's the most reasonable email you could ever get. I fully support those people. And I hope they're enjoying like what they have right now, maybe in like a new and different way, right? Every day. There's a lot of marketing out there. There's a lot of temptation. We talked about it on here before. You know, we do a roundup every week of new stuff and it's all really cool. And we're telling you why and holiday sales and all those kind of things. Like, we're definitely participating in the, hey, maybe you should buy some more boots kind of thing. But hopefully, you know, also doing that for a good reason, because maybe somebody needs one pair and you know, save them some time or give them some insight or help them understand it better. But yeah, like driving people towards like burnout is ultimately a net negative on the industry. That's something you just got to kind of figure out how to like temper and thread that needle and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, think about it plenty. Don't know that there's a perfect answer for it, but yeah, just, I don't know. Be responsible. Go read that article. I think that's,
yeah, but that's the best place to start is that article. And I've try to reread that every time I see it kind of brought up. I'm like, I gotta read it again. I say that as somebody who owns like way too many pairs of boots. So
I mean, there's a lot in there. Again, there's a lot of depth, nuance, kind of personal stuff in there. But also something is like, don't buy boots drunk, which frankly is exactly how I purchased these Snuff Suede Aldens. I was like stuck at a hotel in California after flights were canceled and I was quite upset about it. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to get drunk and buy a $600 pair of boots. Still got them. It was a great investment. But, you know, I try not to do that too frequently. All right. This one, we love every single listener. We respect your questions and your experience. We mean that. We really do. But this one, we got to talk about. Is sizing that important? My boots spread 1.5 Brannock sizes. We might have to pick this apart a little bit. And they all fit enough after some wear.
Whoa.
Maybe it's sizes, right? Because the Brannock refers to like your foot measurement.
Yeah, I'm assuming they mean they've got 9.5s and they've got 11s, right?
That's what I'm saying. And maybe kind of possibilities here. They're just from different sizing scales. Maybe some of them are, you know, UK or to up to true to size, and that could make sense. Maybe this person just has some sort of incredible foot and, like, you know, heel to ball ratio that allows them to do this. But I would throw kind of a hard counter against it if both of those things are not true.
I mean, like, I know people who do what this person's talking about. You know, sometimes people will hit me up for, like, sizing advice, and they'll be like, here's the sizes that fit me best. And I'm like, none of this makes any sense. Something's wrong here, you know? And my, you know, you can't wear a 9.5 in Oak Street and an 11 in Red Wings. Like, that's just not, something's off here, you know? Sizing is super important, but it's also personal. If you don't care and the boots fit you and you like wearing the boots, whatever, you know, I don't have a problem with that. Don't call in the Discord and tell people to size like that, because that's not gonna, yeah, like, keep that to your, maybe just keep that to yourself, you know, don't try to proselytize that, I guess. But people have different tolerances, right? I mean, I've had some friends who it seems like nothing ever fits them and they're constantly churning through stuff and they're all over the place. They're going up. I've got a friend who, when I first got to know him online, was like, size he has like a 10 Brannick, you know, he's like a 9.5 in stuff where, it, you know, 9.5 D Barry, let's say. I think he's now like a 12, you know, and it's not like,
whoa,
it's not like he gained a bunch of weight and his feet swelled. It's not like, whatever. He just
he like started this when he was 11.
Went on a journey of figuring it out until he got there, you know, and he went up a half size at a time and then bought and sold a ton of stuff, right? There's some people who nothing fits them because they have really sensitive feet. They just don't like this style of footwear, or your feet are too used to wearing sneakers and you just don't care for a big rugged boot, and you just got to find the thing that's going to fit you and feel right and work best. That could be a process if you're really particular about it. You know, I'd encourage everybody to go on that journey and figure out what the best size is, regardless of how many times you got to sell everything or rebuy it, or, you know, whatever you have to do, go bespoke or whatever.
Case closed. Well put. Thank you for the question, listener. Send us more information about how this is all working out.
Yeah, let us know what's going on. Let me know if I can help.
All right. Why do boots with leather shanks and amazing arch support give me upright posture?
Yeah, I think that's just the point of them, right? I think that's just the point, is that the boots are designed in such a way that when you stand in them, you have that more upright posture, you know?
It's tough to slouch in a pair of whites.
It's true. Yeah, I think that's just kind of what they're designed to do. You know, we finally got some snow here this year.
About time.
I was like, what am I going to wear as, like, snow boots? I went with the whites. Went with the 350 cutters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm just pounded through ice and whatever, you know, just destroying it. I'll say this. I'll compliment my children. They can hang in the cold. They're beefy boys. You know, we were outside sledding for, like, 3.5 hours one of those days. A lot of the other people were like, oh, my feet, you know, the other parents are out there, right? They got cold. Their feet got cold. They're in these, like, bean boots, or, you know, which, like, bean boots are cool. I've got bean boots too, but, you know, they're not as, like, strong and insulated and whatever. My feet were toasty. I had nice thick socks on. I was comfortable. Yeah, I was standing up, nice posture, wearing a pair of whites or Knicks or something like that, man. That's it, man.
I might have to turn it loose a little bit next time we get some real snow, because I have, for years, for over a decade maybe, maybe longer, I've had this pair of Zamberlin Italian stitched down mountaineering boots that are just, they're Gore-Tex, they're insulated, like, they're huge. They come up a little higher. Like, it seems like it's just a little tougher to, like, get snow in there. And they've been through it. They have, like, a little, I think I did it this year, like, a little chunk taken out of the leather. And, you know, they probably need some conditioning. But they're warm as hell and they're great. And I mostly use those for, like, doing the driveway now, because I think last year or 2 years ago when there was actually a bunch of snow, I was, like, spreading salt and wearing those, and I, like, kind of forgot about them for maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months, and or, like, the D-rings, like, all that kind of, like, corroded a little bit, and, like, I think they're gonna be fine, but, you know, to fully restore them, they need some work. So I still use it for that, like, especially when, like, salt's involved. But then I've been wearing my Limber boots for like hikes with the dogs in the snow and just generally for sure, but putting them through the snow, which are now like, I'm sure they're just going to keep getting better, but like really nicely broken in. Yeah, those are working great too. But you know, these are more kind of like purpose built, like outdoors activity type footwear. But yeah, maybe I'll switch it up a little bit for next time. But they're both like pretty darn warm is the thing. My feet get cold. My toes, they get cold, you know? Like when I'm skiing, like I don't feel my feet after like 10 o'clock until like 6 o'clock at night after you've been off the hill for a little bit. I don't know. If anybody has any circulation tips.
Yeah, I was gonna say what the
DM us.
Yeah, how can we warm up those toes? My toes stay pretty nice and warm. I like a good thick pair. I got these nice thick alpaca socks that I wear in the winter and they're a dream.
But yeah, I mean, fingers too, dude. I've moved to like these gigantic, again, like mittens so I can like rub my fingers together. It's a little tougher to do that with your toes.
Somewhere there's like a doctor listening to this who's like, this guy's got some weird disease. He's got some weird circulation problem.
I mean,
get that checked out, dude. Yeah, you're too old to be letting these things go unchecked. We got to look out for our elder statesman here.
Goddamn circulatory system. Important boot question. Best beverage to order on a plane?
I'll tell you what I order on a plane. This is my order on a plane. Cranberry juice. And I'll tell you why. They'll just give you the whole can because nobody else is going to order. You order Coke. You order a Coke. They give you that stupid little cup and then they keep the rest of the can a lot of the time. You order a cranberry juice. They'll just be like, nobody else is going to order cranberry. They give you the whole can.
It's a smaller can though.
Nope. Full size can.
12-ounce can?
12-ounce can of cranberry juice. They give you the whole thing. Teacher tip.
The problem that you run into, that I run into, I'm sure you've encountered this as well. You order a seltzer on a plane, even coming from, you know, like the New York airports. And they're like, yeah, of course. And then they hand you a fucking club soda.
Ooh.
Just full of sodium. Tastes awful. It's just drying you out, which is the plane's already doing itself. It's insane. It's not like people are ordering gin and tonics, so they like might give you a tonic. Like, I don't want your quinine either. But like they never have seltzers, at least on Delta flights, I guess is what I'm usually taking. It's terrible. So I'm stuck with water. And like in my younger days, like I love just having a whole bunch of, you know, like drinks on a plane. Don't really do that anymore. People are ordering like Bloody Marys. I mean, you see that. It's like, what are you talking about? In the tiny little plastic cup mixed by an expert, obviously. That's always confusing. Yeah. I mean, my favorite travel beverage is... Don't take Amtrak nearly enough, but every Amtrak train I've ever been on has Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA, which is like a real whopper of a double IPA. And you have a couple of those, and they taste beautiful. They're reliable. You know they're there. Completely outclassing everything in that dining car. Yeah, it's kind of wonderful. But they never have that kind of beer on like a plane. Like the beer on planes is bad, and you know you're just going to pay for it on the other side. Like to have one before I get on the plane, you know.
You could bring whatever you want onto a train, though. Like you could just bring some seltzers onto the train. There's no security the same way. You know what I mean?
That's true. I really should be taking advantage of the liquids through the threshold opportunities on rail transport.
Yeah,
it's a great way to travel. Gotta say,
it's really not. This is the other. this is one of my other huge pet peeves with the previous generations of people who have been in charge of this country is our train system sucks. And it takes forever to get anywhere because they give priority to freight trains. And so, yeah, you take Amtrak. You're like, oh, you're on the Acela. Oh, it could go so fast. No, it doesn't. You're waiting behind freight trains. Doesn't matter how fast it could go. It's stupid. It's awful. You would take a train to like what? New Orleans? It's going to take like 80 hours or something. It's going to take a million years.
Is this something you've considered?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I like the concept of traveling by train. I like trains, but... It never makes sense because of how bad our system is. And it's really, really embarrassing.
Yeah, you know? There's more space. You can spread out. Like, you can plug in your computer. Like, the Wi-Fi is similarly bad, but not as overtaxed. That's not true. The Wi-Fi is terrible on Amtrak. You got to edit a podcast, all right? Start a podcast. You just edit the podcast. You go somewhere. And then the podcast is done. I don't know. It's like, I don't care as much about getting there on time, you know, or quickly, because it's kind of nice.
Or cheaply. Yeah, like no, there's no aspect of it that's better than just taking a plane.
Get the tickets early on Amtrak. There's like an initial low price, like a couple months before. then they start jacking them up. It's like a little more systematic than, you know, the airline tickets. Let's take a train trip somewhere.
Where would we go on a train?
New Orleans.
I don't have time for that.
Alaska.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can do that.
DC. It'll take like 12 hours.
DC you could get to. Yeah, DC I could hop on in like Trenton or something and be there and like, but like I could drive to DC in under 3 hours. Like I'm just going to drive there.
All right, this is going nowhere. All right, back to boots. Opinions on double leather midsoles.
Usually unnecessary. Too much.
They look cool sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you could get that big, big chunky look. I know that you love that. But most of the time, completely unnecessary. And they're never going to break in, right? The guys that are going to, especially like the Indonesian guys, I see it a lot, where they're using two full size, full thickness midsoles, right? Like places like in England or other places when they're doing like a double midsole like that, it's two thinner midsoles, right? Which like has its own probably advantages of like, instead of one thick one, right? Is like maybe it flexes better. I don't know. But the two big, big thick ones, that's never going to break in. That's always going to be super uncomfortable. I know you like your like triple welt JM Weston stuff, which like you claimed that you were absolutely going to break them in. They're absolutely going to, you know, whatever. No, of course not. Nope. Of course not. I told you that. Nope. I told you that at the time. I was like, those are never going to break in. You're like, I'm going to break them in. I'm going to do it. Of course not. Just get a normal amount of midsoles, which is one or zero.
Things good. Need at least 1.7 midsoles on any reasonable boot purchase. I mean, it gets really crazy when you throw on like a full rubber sole underneath the double midsole, like not even a half sole, which gives you a little more flex, but the real deal or like the corded sole. Oh my
God. No chance.
Yeah, like I'm looking at these Aldens right now. Like basically these Aldens are a kind of double midsole boot that just doesn't have an outsole on it, right? Like there's two layers. It's a double leather sole. So there's a midsole and there's an outsole. It just happens to be leather, but you could easily put rubber on this or like, you know, the Alden Commando, I guess. But yeah, they're thin. They're like kind of half thinness. And yeah, a lot of the places that like will do this and will do custom, whether it's kind of out west here, somewhere else in the world. Yeah, they're using like the thicker stuff and like they're not low end in any way, but they're not like dress shoe midsoles that are just more designed for comfort than durability. So it's like, Everything is kind of working against you towards having a boot that, frankly, yeah, they look like really cool. Sometimes you'll see them and it'll be like a toe spring kind of last. And you're like, all right, we don't need these to flex. We're just going to kind of roll through the streets here. Maybe something there. Maybe. Yeah. In terms of like tons of comfort, want to wear it every day. It's just tough.
It's never going to happen.
The looks is there a lot of the times for me. All right, another clean transition. What are some trends among boot nerds that we will make fun of in 10 to 15 years?
Probably a bunch of them. I mean,
the oncoming quad midsole that'll be really hot next year.
I feel like we're in a pretty good place of like looking at stuff that has a heritage kind of underpinning to it, where there is some amount of timelessness to a lot of what we're doing. Right. I
feel like people have figured something out.
I think that feels safe, right? It's like, well, okay, these work boots, people have been wearing them for 150 years, whatever it is. They haven't really changed in that time. They probably won't change in the future. So that feels like a pretty safe bet that if you're wearing that 150 years from now, nobody's going to look back and be like, can you believe what this guy was wearing in 2024 when somebody was wearing it in 1875. I don't see that much stuff coming out where I'm like, man, that's too trendy or too, right? Like the very nature of this kind of stuff where it is more expensive and it takes a long time to make, it's more handmade, like it's a little harder to do stuff on trend. Yeah, well, we look back in 10 years and say like, yeah, we were probably like, we were doing too much like horse butt, like stiff kind of veg tan, like stuff that isn't as comfortable, double midsole stuff. Like maybe there were some things we probed a little too deep into, but like, I don't think there's any major thing where everybody's going to be like, oh, 10 years from now, we're all laughing at engineer boots.
No way.
Yeah.
What is there from like 3 or 5 years ago that would apply to this? Were mistakes made along the way to get to a better place?
Probably. Even 10 years ago, right? 2014, people were still basically wearing Red Wings and Firebirds and work boots and stuff for a lot of us.
Maybe it's like color stuff.
I don't know.
Somebody's always going to want a pair of blue boots. You know, it's not like that's like
right
a passing trend. It's something that, I mean, I have multiple pairs of them. So I think they're cool. I don't wear them every day, but I'm not like, oh, God, what a mistake that was. You know, there's like these little micro things that I think always appeal to somebody. I don't know, but can we really be doing this well?
I don't know.
Has ever been looked back upon and been like, maybe we are. Maybe we are.
I feel like the companies that are making products that we're interested in are for the most part removed from like, obviously, you were at trade shows or whatever yesterday. There is somewhat of a, they are somewhat on a fashion cycle of let's do this. But like, yeah, if you're trying to tell me, okay, they're bringing back Beckmans, that's their, you know, that's their fall winter new thing.
Right.
It's like, okay, so they're bringing back something from 100 years ago that 10 years ago we all liked. So no one's going to look back and be like, you guys remember when they brought back Beckmans? How crazy was that? No, we'll just be like, oh yeah. Oh, are those some of the 2024 Beckmans? That was cool. Yeah, they probably did some cool stuff with it, you know? Yeah, I don't think we're going to be cringing too much at much of what we're doing. Maybe the semi-related, we all wore really tapered jeans for a lot of this. And I think that's, we're all starting to realize that the super tight tapered jeans are just uncomfortable. You know, if you're wearing 20 ounce, really tight tapered jeans, blown out the crotch every 6 months. Like, you know, I'm not pointing the finger. I'm pointing the finger at myself. Cause I did that for way too long. And now I'm just wearing, you know, I mostly favor like 1947 501 cuts. And it's really easy to go back and be like, well, these were the jeans they wore in 1947. So what do you want me to do? It's not really a trend.
When you're explaining your jeans at kids' birthday parties.
Exactly.
These are fine.
I do have to explain that sometimes. People are like, oh, well, okay. Once they get through the boots, right, you know, I've spilled the coffee on the loafers. And they're like, what else can this guy teach me? He obviously has some deeper understanding of the universe than I do. Like, what else is here? And then they move slightly up and look at my pants and they're like, what's up with your pants? And I'm like, they're based on 1947 501s. It's a real safe bet, because if somebody asks you about them, you just say that and they're like, oh, okay, great. Oh, they're 1947. That was cool. Yeah, they must have had good jeans back then.
Get that man a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You taught us all something today.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, just a couple more. What's the best non-dress shoe to wear with a suit every day?
A pair of Chelseas, maybe. I like a good Chelsea with a suit. Even just like a dressier derby boot, like a Crockett and Jones or something like that. Carmina makes some good ones for that. Like a dressier derby boot. That sounds pretty cool. You could do some loafers. It's got to be more like a shell loafer, something like that. Could be cool. But does that count as a dress shoe? I'm thinking he's saying like Oxfords.
I'm thinking Oxfords too. I mean, which I do own a pair. They've never been out of the box. So yeah, I don't fall into this. But yeah, like, is a pair of long wings a dress shoe? I mean, obviously kind of. But like for every day?
Every day I'm going. If every day I'm going like a Chelsea, you know, like a Carmina Chelsea or something like that. A little dressier Chelsea if you're fully need to be wearing suits, which like almost nobody does anymore, I think.
Guys at the suit store?
Yeah, guys at the suit store, get some Chelseas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do it.
Yep. This is fun. We could do like a whole episode with this. And I like how they frame this instead of the kind of other version. Start, bench, cut. Service boot, Alden Leisure hand sewn. We could just call it a loafer maybe. Engineer boot. So one of them starting.
Okay.
One of them, you know, they're ready to play
mm-hmm.
when it's time, right? Six man.
Yeah. I mean, I think safely the loafer's on the bench, right? You keep the loafer in reserve. It's ready to go. When you need it, it's there. For me, that's not my everyday. So then it's just, are you wearing engineers every day? Or are you going to wear service boot every day? I have the data
lifestyle
on my
choice.
Own life, and then I go service boots pretty much every day. I like the more secure fit of a lace-up. I like just the classic look of a service boot. I enjoy an engineer, for sure, but like it's not as good if you're doing a ton of walking or whatever, if you're...
So if you're going to go like hiking and stuff, because I've worn my Wescos kind of just to do it, you know, and they got like the V-tread sole. It's somewhere in the middle in terms of like capabilities. But again, like, I mean, you've been on these little hikes, right? Like up in the woods here, there's terrain, there's elevation changes, there's rocks and stuff. Yeah, you're not really locked in there with the engineers. And that's something I do every day. So that's obviously a big part of kind of when I'm wearing boots. I'm cutting the service boot for myself because I just don't really wear regular lace-up boots. Now, if that was a lace-to-toe boot,
okay,
call it 7-inch, there's your starter, right? I mean, that's an all-pro player. But yeah, I mean, just for my personal usage, I mean, I have some service boots. I do wear them periodically. They look great on the shelf. They look great in pictures. But yeah, that's just not what, for whatever reason, calls to me personally. I'm starting the loafer. I'm starting the just classic penny loafer. You know, maybe it's snuff suede. It's tough to cut the engineer out here, but yeah, like day to day, I don't, I mean, I got a high instep. There's reasons for this.
Yeah.
Personally, but I don't know, man. I mean, I could see having either of those on the bench, but really my bench player is going to be not like a deep bench guy, right? Like out of these three, because I'm not going to wear a loafer every single day unless it's summer. So I think, I don't know, this is tough. I think I might pull out the service boot as like the safe play, or you cut it and say, I'm going to wear a lot more engineers, which is pretty fun and just a commitment. But I think once you get into the flow, which, I mean, you've been there before, right? Like wearing them constantly for long periods of time, the barrier kind of disappears, right? To be like, oh, am I going to yank these things on, deal with the pants and everything? But once you get into it, you're like, fuck, I feel so cool in these. Like, I do feel kind of at my coolest boot wise when wearing engineer boots.
Yeah, I mean, they would fall under what that guy earlier described as my special, right? They're the special where you're like, oh, I want to go kind of like have, feel a little cool. I'm going out to dinner. I'm doing like
stunt a little.
You know, I want to flex a little bit and be like, hey, I got these cool boots. And then because it's nice, because somebody will notice them and be like, oh, those are pretty cool boots. And then you kind of like, you go, oh, you think that's cool? And then you like kind of pull the pants up a little bit and show them that they're like 11 inches tall. The kids are still freaking out from the coffee trick. And then you're just sealing the deal with the parents.
You got them all.
Yeah, I got everybody.
All in the palm. But dude, I mean, consistently, anytime I wear my engineers, more with the Wescos, I think because they're light, because my kind of short Viberg engineers are black and maybe that just doesn't register as much for people. But the other ones are all kind of funky and natural or whatever. Every single time if I'm like out in public in a place, this has happened at the post office, this has happened just places you're in for like very short periods of time. Some middle-aged woman is like, I love those boots. I love them. Every time.
Yeah. They are noticed somewhat more. I think the, you know, you got the woodsman heel, you got the buckle. There's some other aspects of it that kind of catch people's eye. And, you know, that's what makes it less of a starter for me. I look back at things I've tried to do for the Thunderdome. I'm much happier just wearing a lace up every single day. So that would be my starter. I need loafers to just throw on and go do stuff. Those are essential. Engineers in the summer can be tough. So it's like, yeah, if this is my all year, what I'm doing, I got to have the loafers, you know. Usually with my engineers, I'll wear like over the calf merino wool dress socks.
I wear merino wool ski socks, but like thin ones, yeah. But
it's still summer and you're wearing wool up to your knee and then jeans and then leather over it. So your feet are going to be a little bit warmer. It just isn't as great. It's not as versatile throughout the year. Yeah, having some fun, looking cool. It's a tough cut, unlike the kicker for the Bills, who's an easy cut.
Sorry, you cut out there for a second. Yeah, I like this concept, though. Start bench cut. Cut the kicker, I agree. All right, let's wrap this up. Last one. Oh, this is from our friend Adele. Adele Williamson, bespoke shoemaker for Trickers. Adele asks, this is a real question from the real Adele, who, throwing this out there, makes shoes for the King of England with her hands. And Adele is wondering, should I exchange my handmade shoe collection for a pair of Crocs? So you can just make more.
Yeah, I guess it, I mean, I think she's just saying like wholesale switch over, just be all about the Crocs. That's a pretty easy call. I would say, Adele, please keep on wearing your beautiful bespoke shoes. Do not show up to touch the king's feet wearing Crocs. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think the Croc Corporation has a royal warrant. You can't put the seal on one of those little Croc pin things that fall off every 5 seconds. I will say both my kids wear Crocs. They love Crocs. I hate those little pins, though, because 10 times a day, my kids, oh, the Croc pin fell off. Can you put the thing back on? And you got to like jam it in there and it's terrible. But otherwise, Crocs are doing what they need to do. They've earned a little bit of my respect. I will never personally wear a pair or own a pair because that's just not who I am. But
you've never put on a pair of Crocs?
I've never tried a pair on. I never will. I never will. I'll also say Adele is choosing the bodega sandwich from the question earlier because she told me at boot camp that she went and got one of those bodega sandwiches and it like changed her life. So
of course it did.
Yeah. The king is in good hands with Adele. I'm not much of a monarchist, but it's at least good to know that he's got his footwear situation sorted. At least that is under control. But if we see him wearing Crocs, we'll know what happened. Bespoke Crocs.
All leather Crocs.
With like a royal seal on the Croc pin.
Mm-hmm.
Could be cool. Could be cool. Crocs, get on that. Get on that.
This is going somewhere. Yeah. I hope she told him about the bodega sandwich last time when they were just kind of having that idle chatter on the measurement, you know?
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you've been over to the colonies. And she's like, they have this amazing development there called a bodega sandwich. And he's like, oh, top notch.
That was it. I think they made a video out of it. All right, yeah, Adele, you know what to do. You know what to do. All right, let's call it somewhere. It's right here. Huge thanks to Grant Stone for sponsoring this episode. Huge thanks to you, Ticho, I guess, but also listeners, all of you for listening and supporting this Minorly Insane podcast. Get real with that support. Go get it by becoming a Stitch Down premium member and checking out our private Discord server. This is the big one. Wherever you are in the world, save that date for October 12th and 13th, 2024 for Stitch Down's Bootcamp 2. Oh man, you're going to love it. Just get to New York, whatever it takes. And we're probably going to be doing, I mean, I'll just say it right now. We're going to do it. We'll have VIP tickets that'll be great and you might want, but everybody else is going to be general admission, which means it's all the more important to put it down on your calendar, you know, be in town, book a flight or whatever, but it'll be good. I can assure you. Ticho, fine work. Good job.
Thanks, buddy. Sorry about the Buffalo Bills. I recommend basketball. Give it a try.
Great Knicks-Nets game last night. It was good. That's it for this week. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.